Hi, this is Eric Bordelais from Château de Hauteville in Charchigny, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 58, part 2 with Eric Bordelais. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly podcast, where we chat with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are rolling into part 2 with Eric Bordelais. There'll be more on that chat in a moment. Are you an online shopper? Well, Cider Chat is a member of the Amazon Affiliate Program, which means by entering Amazon via the Cider Chat resource page, any and all purchases that you make online at Amazon provides Cider Chat with a small kickback. Please take that extra 1 minute to think about Cider Chat next time you go online to make your Amazon purchase and help keep this chat thriving. Go to ciderchat.com/resource and click the Amazon link today. I am so excited to go down this list of all the cool people who have just joined in on the conversation at the Cider Chat Facebook page. And the first person is Erin from Utrecht in the Netherlands. And buddy, if you don't know, there is an episode that's number 10 with Margot Sanderse, and she has the Het Cider House. It's kind of a mobile like cider bar in a way, and she imports. So that was pretty cool. I met her at the cider meetup that was held in Amsterdam in 2015. And then there's Tom. Tom is from the Apple Isle of Tasmania. And if you don't know your geography, Tasmania is part of Australia. And it looks like Tom owns a B&B. So Tom, drop me a line and let me know what the name of that B&B is so I can make mention of it, because I do hope there's going to be tons of cider tourists heading out that way. There are lots of wonderful stuff happening all over Australia. And of course, you know, I did speak with Sam Reed from Willie Smith's Cider, and he's also the president of Cider Australia, and that was episode 31. And interestingly, Eric Bordelais, who's on this chat this week, has had a lot of discussion with Sam Reed. So that's a pretty cool connection there. And then we have Monica, who is from Maine. And another little kind of piece in relationship to this podcast, Eric Bordelais is actually based in an area that used to be called Maine. And it's spelled just like the state of Maine, which is so interesting. So you'll hear him make mention of that straight away as we're in the pear orchard this week. And then we have Julia, she's involved in forensic pathology. I think that's just so cool. You know, we do need folks who have that kind of background in cider, because there's so much mystery that we have to like pull out. I dig that. So welcome, Julia. And then we have Michelle, who's from Florida. And it looks like Michelle is or was an EMT. And go, Michelle. You know, I was an EMT. You know, once an EMT, always an EMT. We do like our cider. I know lots of paramedics, too, actually, who drink cider. In fact, I'm going to be seeing one in like a week or so. Then there's Alex, who goes by saying that he's the chief of something or other. Oh, I know that feeling. Then there's a cool business called Orchard Box. And if you don't know what Orchard Box is and you're from the UK, well, I'd be really surprised, because that is a cider subscription service. And they're doing really great things getting cider like delivered right to your door. So thank you so much for joining in on the Cider Chat Facebook page. And then we have Chad from Indiana and Chuck from Virginia. And then Andy from Michigan, and he's with the Michigan cidery called Pox Cider. That's pretty cool. And then there's Wine Cellars LTD Importing and Marketing. That's a mouthful there, and I'll tell you, if you see the profile picture of that business, these guys look like so like they know what they're doing. I love the photo. It's really cool. They're like, you know, like the black and white suit type of setup and looking very dignified. And what I know about that business, they're going to be probably at CiderCon because they are like the importers for some of the French cider makers that are going to be attending the 2017 CiderCon event in Chicago. So that's awesome. And thank you so much. Thank you to everyone. Do know that the Cider Chat Facebook page is not exclusive, so come on over and join in on the conversation. It's one spot of Ciderville that is just for you. Well, I always enjoy finding wonderful 5-star reviews and ratings for this podcast on iTunes. And this one is in from Bioman. And he writes, I just found this podcast. I have been into cider for a few years and have made a few batches myself. I thoroughly enjoy listening to this. I'm learning, which was my primary hope for this podcast. Thank you for your efforts, Brian. Well, Brian, back at you. Thank you for your efforts because every review and rating on iTunes for this podcast helps it kind of move up the scale and get seen and heard by so many people who are like yourself, searching for a cider podcast that will give them some background and some info. And I like that feedback because, you know, the truth is, every episode I do, I learn something too. And certainly this week with Eric Bordelais, there's a lot in it. So thank you very much. And if you're like Brian and you like Cider Chat and you want to help in any way possible, take the time today and leave a review and rating. If you could do that at iTunes, wonderful, or wherever you find this podcast. Last week in episode 57, we were speaking with Eric Bordelais over lunch in a hotel restaurant at Hotel de Gat in Bagues de Olen. And there are links in the show notes to this hotel, and that particular town is quite interesting because it's in the national park area of the lower end of Normandy, which is like a region of France. It's just like there's a region in the United States like New England, the Midwest, the Pacific Northwest. The same thing happens in most countries. France is no different. The upper part of Normandy borders Belgium to the north, and of course, Spain is to the south of France. But Normandy, that region, goes down a bit, and then there's another region called Brittany. And both of these are major producing areas for cider. Eric is a little bit off of the cider route that you'd be heading out from if you're going into Paris and heading out that way. And of course, his particular location does not offer an open room for the public at this point. He's really looking at setting up what he talked about in episode 57 as a World Cider Organization. And that kind of leaves one quite a bit from last week to ponder on what that's going to be looking like. And he certainly spoke to me about some of the people that he's pulling in and working with to look at setting up a standard. I mean, this man has a certain quality that he's looking for. And the fact that he is able to cellar his ciders and that they develop into an amazing quality of cider over the course of a couple of years is rather unique. You have to have certainly specific tannins. And he talked about sometimes really looking at the apples that you have in your region and not trying to grow something out of another region. So I think that's interesting. I don't know if it really lends itself for all of us to be able to have a cider that can be cellared in that way. But then again, having made cider myself for the past 20 years, I've noticed that my ciders really develop over time in some absolutely delicious ways. So there's a lot to be said there, a lot of food for thought. This week, we're going to begin by walking into the field where some of these pear trees that are so well known for the poire, which is the French word for perry, that he makes. And his poire is absolutely amazing. And he's really going to be talking about a little bit about the landscape there. And there will be photos on the show notes of these pear trees that are enormous. I mean, they're absolutely giant. And there are these graph lines. It's almost hard to believe that it's a graph line because it's something that we're not familiar with. Because in the U.S., we just don't have trees this old. I mean, this country, the United States, isn't that old when they were like really planting pear trees or apple trees even. So you have to go there, and really to go in that whole region, you're not going to just see one pear tree that's really old. You're going to see a lot of them. So we start there, and then we'll get back in the car and head to the chateau that he is rebuilding. And I'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll take a walk into the cidery. So without further ado, let's grab a glass and join this chat with Eric Bordelais.
It's good to get outside.
Because it's not wet this afternoon, that's why. The other one was very wet this morning, so that's why I take
it. With the dew, sure.
Yeah, I'll come to the side, huh?
Yeah.
Eric has led us into a large green field with low grass. We look out in the distance and see what I guess to be 35-foot trees ahead. There's a skip in his step as he walks towards each giant of a tree, picking up fallen pears as he goes along to hold for a moment and feel its stage of ripening. The girth of some of the largest pear trees are much too wide for me to circle with only two arms. If a knight in full armor came riding into the field on his way to Paris, I would have not been surprised. It's as if we drank the tea and fell into a rabbit hole, rolling backwards into time.
300 or 400 years old, I think.
Wow.
Soon Eric is pointing out some of the graphs on the oldest of the trees, and my sense of normal is thrown even further off balance.
Very nice graph.
But yeah, that's
never
very react, clean.
Never the same level. You know, this one at this level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine the guy who's make this. This one has got two pears.
Two pears on it, grafted onto it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Is this the one? Yes.
So where would the graft be?
Because
look at that.
I took a graft here from this and this. Different pears.
Right.
And yeah. Voila. Look.
What a crown on this tree. Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Voila. The same trees, you have two different fruit.
Yeah.
And I do that. Some graft like this.
Sure.
I show you.
Sure.
Because
so healthy.
He keep the rootstock one in case it doesn't work here. So I think he keep because the birds came here near the graft. So he keep in case it doesn't work here. And it's interesting. It's a wild variety.
Do you see the graft where they grafted on here? Where do you think that when this was originally grafted, there's this tree. I'm not seeing, you know, this is just original, right? Not a grafted tree? Do you know what I'm, like not like that or that.
No, it was grafted.
Right. I'm just trying to see where the line is.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm too close to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will show you the one I've done last year.
Okay.
You could see what's happened. How can happen.
Yeah, I mean
like
that's
this.
Just the age of it. It's just so old, it's just blended into it. That's
oak is getting old quicker than the pear trees.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because sometimes it's quite long to
I don't get the opportunity to see this kind of age in a pear tree, so it's kind of hard to wrap my head around seeing this. You know, that's
revolution time. Imagine.
Yeah.
My grandfather didn't plant.
Right. Beautiful. It's interesting that they didn't do it low. They did it all high. It's kind of like almost the same. I mean, a little bit, you know. Now, nothing's low down here, unless this is so old.
I imagine.
When you graft, maybe you can start here, and it doesn't work. The next year, you can cut and you graft again. I think he chose here because he tried maybe a few years before here.
Mm. Or maybe they didn't want to bend over, so they did it at the height that they're like they're protecting their back. They're being smart.
Photos say a thousand words, so please do go to the show notes for this episode, number 58, to see the height of the graft line that Eric is pointing out to us. It stands approximately 4 feet off the ground. And it's so hard after so many years to imagine that that is a graft line, because it looks like nothing I have ever seen before. Eric next tells us a little bit about the history of the pear tree in this region.
Come in 14th century, So it was vineyards before, not too much, but vineyards in Normandy. But from 14, it's apple trees, but the pear trees are here for prehistoric time.
It's natural trees, and but some reason it didn't get cut down. That's what it's like magic when that happens.
Because they make calvados a lot.
Oh, okay.
But not anymore now. But it's a shame to cut a tree like this.
We're beginning to head out of the pear orchard, but I'm stuck in the thought of how could anyone think of bringing a saw within a mile or 200 miles of these mighty pear trees, laden with fruit, just waiting for the right person to come along. But that is what I've learned on this trip to Normandy and France overall, that though one may love the apple and the pear, the same battle is being fought even here to preserve pear trees.
Always the first suggestion I do to young people, take care around yourself, your valley, and you do your own personality.
Yes.
The only way to give a value to cider.
Yes.
If everyone has to keep his own personality.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's like human being. We need Indian, we need black people, we need
diversity.
If we mix the culture, it should be interesting to have the idea of each.
Right.
It's my opinion. I don't know in America.
We head on to the chateau, but not before visiting two more orchards, both of which Eric is one grafting and planting, but at the same time preserving. Continuing with that echo that apples and pears and palms aren't protected everywhere, even with Eric Bordelais' region of Normandy, or what is known as the Maine, the region between Normandy and Brittany. We turn off the main road and take the drive up to the Chateau de Hauteville. It's a towering building built of stone and concrete, 3 stories tall, and there's a crane sticking off the roof. Soon, Eric gets us settled, and we take a tour into this magnificent building that I'm sure in its heyday had seen its glory. But as the story goes, it had burned down so many years ago. Really, the chateau was a castle. A castle in that time that was not a fortress, but was a country estate. Now, so many years, Eric Bordelais is rebuilding it. Eric leads us down the stairs into the lowest level of the chateau. The floor is dirt, and we're walking on planks. You could see the reinforcement that they've done most recently with the chateau to really fortify it, so many years after its original construction. The ceiling is curved as an archway, and it is dark until he puts on the lights and leads us down a long hallway into a much larger curved room that is filled with barrels, barrels of Calvados.
Now it's for 20 years here.
Because
1% by year,
sure.
So it starts at 70.
Yeah.
It should be nice at 50 or 40, 45.
45 years.
And
so around 20 years, you think Calvados is still too young?
Good.
Or very
20
good?
It starts to be interesting after 20 years of aging.
Yeah.
It depends on the cellar.
Sure.
Because most of the time, it's too dry room. And here, it's natural and wet room.
How much liquid do you lose over that time?
6% by
6%,
year.
6%, yeah.
Most of time.
And so what do you do if you're losing that? You just let it go and just let it
continue
down? Yes, of
course,
down.
Because I can't produce this vintage. I can't produce anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We distillate 1 year after the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's better to have some oxygen here, so to have some place here. It's always better.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put a new one because it's different vintage.
Sure,
so,
it will change it.
And the degree will be up if you added a 70% one.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I respect each vintage.
So we're looking at markings 94, 93.
That's the number of the oak, but I never...
Oh, the oak, okay, not the year.
The age, no, not the year,
okay.
Of course. No, it's the number of the oak, because I have the year of the fruit, the year of the distillation, and I don't put in a barrel.
Right. So above this barrel is this like chute going up in a little window. Was that for them to like stick like guns out or what? Do you know?
What
like,
do you mean? No.
What was that big for? Like just air. Oh, it
well,
was
oxygen,
for air.
Aeration, I think. It was not for.
Not for battle.
No.
Right. This wasn't. Castle probably was never set up for battle.
Voilà, it's a young castle.
We move out of the barrel room now, reluctant to leave the arched ceilings of this magnificent room and the smell of Calvados aging. Now it's on to the south side of the building, still at the lowest level, noticing the slots up on the ceiling that allows air to come in this area that was once used to store vegetables like a root cellar. Then after a bit of joking that you will hear next, Eric points out bins of bottles that hold the coveted poré, or a rendition of the poré that so many long for from Eric Bordelais.
These are some good stones. This is all shale here?
Yes, it's because it's big for water here.
Oh, like a cistern?
Take care, because
yes, it might fall off.
You.
That'll make a story.
Bye, bye.
Throw me cider.
We'll have it recorded.
That'll be just my luck. I'll tell you.
Don't push it.
Here, it's ice berry.
Knock on wood.
Okay, ice berry. Wow. Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, that's beautiful bottles.
Wow.
2013. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
So, ice pair from 2013, and then when do you consider this something like this would be ready? It could be ready now.
You tell me.
Yeah. Okay.
No, not now.
No. You how long?
Because it's too delicate. I don't want to go in more than 10% alcohol or 11 or 12. I think it's too much. Stop at 6 or 7, depends on the vintage. And the rest is sugar, but it's too delicate, so people like when it's rich, but I prefer delicate and wait 10 more years.
So there you have it, another example of how Eric Bordelais cellars his ciders and perry. In this case, ice perry, aging for the next 10 years. This is a 2016, so look for it in 2026. We leave behind the lowest level of the chateau where the Calvados and ice perry is aging. The castle is immense. We follow with a tour on the uppermost floor and then the main floor where the shay, or the cidery, will be moved to. And all along the way, Eric is pointing out the amazing red rock that is built into the wall. Indigenous to the landscape and oh so pertinent to the poré and ciders that is made by Eric Bordelais.
See the rocks I like, this one.
Yeah, really red rock.
Oxidation because it's more iron. Sometimes, but that's not from this area, not far away, but it's not the underground.
These big blocks here.
That's this mixture.
The smaller red ones.
Then it's on to the cidery, which is away from the chateau and down the hill. In the area of the chateau that was once part of the stables, houses now the shay for Eric Bordelais.
So we just came down from the castle. We're walking down behind the carriage building, and our noses all started smelling, and we saw some apples. We came onto a little tractor. It's filled with some pressed pumice that's going to be then moved, as Eric was saying, at the compost. And we see some tanks on the back side here outside.
We will move in 3 or 4 years, maybe, and we don't know yet. Mm. And we try to do something with this to protect.
Mm-hmm. A roof. So we're looking, Eric's pointing out at like all these metal I-beams here, and we walked on the back side of what was a carriage house, and there's a new foundation there, and that's where he's talking about putting some cider bottles.
Foundation everywhere.
Foundations everywhere, because you have to start from a foundation, and there's an orchard back here, and then a little round building. What is that round building? Was that like a windmill?
For the
cistern.
Water.
Yeah, well, a well, yeah.
It's to my brothers until then.
Oh, okay.
And maybe the pigeon.
The pigeon, and they live there too. Well, right. Everybody needs a home. Yeah. Yeah. So now we're walking back towards this big building on the back side of the carriage house. We got the big door sliding out, and this is the
press room, we could say.
Yeah, press room, okay. How much do you look in terms of tonnage? Like how much, how many boxes of apples do you do?
I'm never good with the numbers, the sheaf, because it depends on the variety.
Yeah, sure.
And the vintage. Yeah. And anyway, most of the time we have 40% of the juice in apple and 55% of pears. Some variety, some vintage is 30%, and sometimes, most of the time, it could be 60 some years, some variety of pears, but it's 40 to 55, depends on the vintage. Mm. In some industry, it's 150, 120% sometimes, because they added water during the press.
Right, right.
Here, you know, it's press one, it's press twice, three and four, and they can put some water in here to put some water with the must. And press again here.
Right.
So that's why I said 120%. You know,
right, 50. Right.
The industry, most of the, even the farmer do this as well.
Oh, really?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. Stupid. Yeah, adding it on. And I know there's like the AOC appellation for cider, but for you, when you're doing this and you've... how do I ask this? It's all natural, right? You're just using the juice. You're not adding any kind of pectin to juice or
only,
anything.
I did only do some for the collage, the bentonite, or some SO2.
Okay.
Each time we touch the we decant, we put a touch of SO2.
Just a, little perspiration.
It's
very minimal.
Not too much.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. So nothing else that break down the apple or any type of yeast culture, you don't have to do that because you're using
natural yeast.
All yeast, natural yeast here.
Natural yeast, and we use a kind of bentonite for the collage. Some
bentonite.
Depends.
Yeah, that's very standard. And then there's
it's natural bentonite. You understand?
Yes.
It's kind of argile, I think.
We can tell as well with
the Kisselgur, it's a kind of argile, voilà. Like in wine.
Yes, look at that. Yeah, it's very fine.
Oui, voilà, c'est ça, but it's quite big filtration.
It is a big filtration, yeah. And when you filter that, at what stage are you filtering that? You're on the other side of making your cider. You're not filtering right after you press.
No.
No. It's when you're going towards the finish.
A few days.
Okay.
Depends on the fermentation as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We control by temperature as well.
I'm not quite familiar with this this filter. So is there? These are different. It's a circular filter, and it has different. Holes, I'm going to say, in this. Is that right? Or you
know? It's going inside here.
Inside there,
and after it's going out here.
Right. It's not paper at all.
Not at all.
Right, it's all stainless.
I don't like when it's paper.
Okay.
I have tried and I prefer this.
Yeah.
Because there is a cake like this and it's...
It's very thick, yeah.
The argile is doing the filtration. It's not this, it's the argile.
Argile.
A special powder, very fine powder. That depends on what kind of argile.
Right, that you have there.
It's like in wine. It's called the terre, filtration à terre. Kisselgur. It's a Kisselgur.
Kisselgur.
Oui.
Yeah. It was here to kind of mix it all up.
Voilà. And yeah. There is injection here. Mm-hmm. Injection, each liters, and stop here.
Mm-hmm.
Filter here. Yeah.
And then you just put it out.
Another vat and mm-hmm. after natural mm-hmm. fermentation. Mm-hmm.
And so there's all different ways that people make cider. Some people do a single variety.
I don't want.
And you do a blend from the beginning. You say, this is my cider. I'm going to have that blend right there. But I think that happens because you are, I'm going to say, orchard-based. You've been out all season long tasting that and saying, okay, this, it's like making the wine from the grapes. You're saying this grape here. Is that how you look at it when you're blending?
I need all the variety, because some variety are bitter, some are sweet, some are acid, and if I want to have a good balance in my produce, even if it's brut, demi-sec or sweet, you need to have the complexity by the blend.
Right.
It's my opinion for cider to have more balance.
Mm-hmm.
Bitterness, it's the body. The sweet apple, it's this.
The skin, muscles.
Not only the skin, inside.
Okay.
You have the body,
right,
the bone, and after you have the sweet apple and the acidity apple, it's for the perfume.
The flush. Mm-hmm.
To get
for
your nose.
Right.
Voilà. But it's my sommelier's feeling, but it's not cider feeling, it's just my feeling.
Yes, voilà. Sure.
You understand, it's after you can make one cider with one apple, but if I taste, I think it's missed something. It's just a short taste,
mm-hmm.
short flavor, or short something missing. Okay, that's my opinion. But some apple maybe can be interesting, but I think I never mix apple or pear, but then always mix a different kind of apple.
Voilà. Right in the beginning, that's
for
it.
For the complexity.
Right, the complexity.
We move out of the cidery and onto another part of the tour when I happen to glance over and see something that looks like a press. But Eric corrects me and lets me know that's part of the biodynamic work that he uses here on the orchards. Now, if you aren't familiar with biodynamic farming, well, it's one step way outside of the box from organic. Typically, at most farms, it's a whole system where you have animals, where you're producing the manure, and you are not bringing anything from outside of the world. It's difficult to get certification, as you'll hear both of us discussing, but at the same time, many people can use principles of biodynamic in their farming and orchard care. For instance, in biodynamic farming, there are 4 different days for planting, dependent upon what you are producing. There's a flower day, a root day, a fruit day, and a leaf day. Now, if you're working with root stock, of course you're going to want to look at the root day. But most folks who are in orchards growing apples and pears are going to be wanting to look at the fruit day. Now, I'm not an expert on biodynamic farming, but what I do know is that the lunar cycle really impacts the Earth. I mean, just look at the ocean. It moves the ocean every single day, twice a day, high tide and low tide. So when you think about, how could that work with farming? Well, there is some research, and again, you could look at what it says on the link, but there was a woman, Maria Thun, and she did some work where she replicated one of her experiments. This is in 1970, and she showed when she was planting, I believe it was broccoli, which is a flower day planting, because we really want those nice broccoli crowns. They did shine more, or grow more, I guess you would say, when they were planted on such a day. So if you're looking at the lunar calendar, you work with that accordingly. There's also more on that too, where you create tinctures for your land. And that's a little bit, I believe, of what Eric's doing. He does work with biodynamic farming. He is not certified, and he'll give you a little bit of the background there as we walk along to the area where they store the cider bottles. Now let's get back with Eric Bordelais and see his hit on biodynamic farming.
An old press, huh?
No.
No?
Biodynamic, you know?
Biodynamic.
Biodynamic, sorry.
Yes, thank you.
No, you're good.
You're good.
And it's to do the preparation.
To mix, exactly. Right.
So dynamizer, it's called.
I see.
Dynamizer.
Okay, yes, all right.
Very important here, yes.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about biodynamic.
Yes.
Are you doing the, when you're doing the grafting, or your...
Of course, I choose a day.
You choose a day?
Of course, yes.
It makes so much sense.
But oui, because everything moves.
Yeah.
And it's better to have some day, a fruit day, roots day, leaves day, and some day you
a
don't
flower
have to
day.
Do it. Wait,
yes, right. Yeah.
So, of course, I take care.
Right.
We continue across the courtyard and enter yet another room. Here is where Eric sets up the packaging to send off his ciders and purees around the world. The room itself is something to gaze upon. The ceiling is a latticework of oak beams. At one time, this room was used to store the flour for the chateau. You could feel the fortitude and strength of the room. It lends itself to the feeling for Eric Bordelais and Chateau de Hauteville, a feeling of perseverance and moving beyond the old and the new and blending it to the perfect balance. It has been a full day from the lunch to the tours of the pear and apple orchards and seeing the reconstruction at the Chateau de Hauteville and then standing within his cidery and feeling the craftsmanship there. After a short rest in the afternoon, that evening, Eric picks us up once again at the hotel for an evening of fish and chips and beer. I'd like to thank Eric Bordelais for being such a kind and generous host. I'm not one to wish a time away, but I certainly look forward to a sip of that Calvados in 2026. But in the meanwhile, there's so many delicious ciders or sidra and purees from Eric Bordelais. Do go to episode 58 to see photos from this trip and to find the contact info so you can find your own sip and savor a wee bit of Eric Bordelais. A big shout out to all the patrons who help support this chat and keep it producing and moving forward. You too can become a patron by going to Cider Chat's Patreon page. There'll be a link in the show notes to that. And we have two new cideries who have joined in on the Cider Going Up campaign. There is a page at ciderchat.com to find out more about that. But let me introduce you to the Cider Project. These are the Lawtons from Sebastopol, California. And they write, "We are launching a new cidery called the Cider Project. As we think good ciders are created by working with what nature provides us, but also looking at ways to express the best of the fruit from fermentation to blending to bottling. We've also been working to support the cider culture here in West County by forming a small cider group to encourage small blend experiments." Woohoo! Well, congratulations for all of that, and a tip of the glass to the Lawtons. And the other cidery that we have now on the Cider Going Up campaign page is Santa Cruz Cider Company, and that is indeed in California. You know I love that town. Anywho, Nicole wrote, "I discovered your cider chat this year just as the harvest started and eagerly devoured every episode while I was picking apples. Every single chat had so much valuable information that I wanted to be taking notes to help further my quality of cider. That didn't work so well while I was 15 feet up in a tree." I'm so glad you stayed safe, Nicole. Be careful having been up in trees. "So I'm now beginning to listen to them all again. Ay, ay, ay. I look forward to the calm smoothness of your voice and the interesting people you have met along the way." Aw, shucks. Anyways, she writes this, "I heard on your last chat that you'll be in our area again this month, and I'd love to have a cider meetup. So, yabba-dabba-doo, I'm going to be meeting with Nicole of Santa Cruz Cider Company coming right up, because next week I head to California." Yeah, I always get a big happy beat in my voice here because, well, I'm going to go see my family, and I'm going to meet folks like Nicole, and I'm going to be checking out some cider. Oh, boy, too much fun. And so you'll be hearing more about that along the way. And if you want to follow along, hey, let's connect via Twitter at Cider Chat, or certainly on the Cider Chat Facebook page. Well, all these amazing cideries that are getting in on the scoop here and helping this podcast promote cider around the world. And if you would like to help out too, well, you know, you could support the likes of these cider companies, such as Oliver's Cider and Perry from Hertfordshire in the UK, and Big Apple Hard Cider in New York City, and of course, it's current cider of Percy, Pennsylvania, which now have their ciders available in cans. If you are a commercial cidery and would like to help this campaign to keep a cider going up and promoting it around the world and joining the likes of these forward-thinking cider makers, well, just go to the Cider Going Up campaign page at ciderchat.com. Now, you know, you might think like, well, Rhea's getting really like advertising oriented, but this is part of cider love here, folks. And I know in the back of my mind, you know, I have some choices here. I could go with like really big cider companies and say, hey, you know, I'm going to be your like one and only. But that's not the way I like to roll in Ciderville. I want to keep everybody part of it and feeling included. That's the way I like to see it. And I hope you do, too. So if you're a commercial cider maker, please get involved. It doesn't take much. And when you think about all the commercial cideries, boy, if we're all part of one team doing this, we could really blow the socks off of folks around the world and keep them mushing out the apple and pressing a little bit of juice and getting into the cider groove. That is what it's all about. You know, we're starting to close out this year here of 2016 and looking forward to 2017. And I'm just jazzed up thinking about the potential there and have lots of things in the hopper, so to speak, just trying to figure out what to do and how to orient it all. And, of course, keeping this chat thriving is one of my top pieces because I just love this connection that we have. I'm thinking about you. Yes, I am looking exactly at you listening right now, talking into your earbuds or riding down the road with you, singing a little bit of Apple tunes.
Apple picking time in Orange, New Jersey, will be a peach of a pear. I know we cantaloupe, but honey, do be mine, and I'll throw my arms around you like a watermelon vine.
And if you want some Apple tunes while you're out and about with your family during this holiday season, check out that episode called Apple Songs. I do believe that it is the Double Nickel episode number 55. Mm-hmm. Well, I do have to start packing and getting ready for my trip to the West Coast. So I'm going to roll on out of here and bid you adieu. This is Rio in Color, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville.